Welcome to Look Up with Pastor Mike and his wife Linda Sasso of Calvary Chapel of Eagle, a radio ministry designed to assist you in applying God's Word to your everyday life. For the next hour, Pastor Mike and Linda will encourage you with your walk with Christ and help you look up to Jesus. If you need advice on marriage, life challenges, or relationships, call in now. It's time to look up to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Here's Mike and Linda.
Well, hi, everybody. This is Pastor Mike, and welcome to Look Up. We're looking forward to seeing what the Lord's going to do once more in our hour together. And as you know, quite often we'll do just special topics. And those of you who've been following us for any length of time, you realize that, you know, because of our life of grief, we actually lost our youngest daughter at 36 years old. She took her life. It was quite tragic. And we've shared about that. We've shared our testimony. But what that's done is that's opened up the door for many people that we've met and some that we've known already who've gone through loss and grief. And many of them are in ministry. Many of them are seeking to serve the Lord. And yet, tragedy hits. And we just think this is a worthy topic to address that from time to time we'll actually bring people in for interviews or phone interview. Today we do have a live interview of just two friends of ours, James and Crystal Doucette. We've known them for many years. And Crystal has lost her father in January 6th of 2018. And here's the thing. So far you guys have heard from us concerning the loss of a child. And sometimes we tend to, we value things like, oh, well, this is worse than that, or this is easy, but that's hard. And it's just not true. Loss is loss, and grief is grief. And I don't know what you have gone through in your life or what you're currently going through right now, but we want you to understand that God knows, He cares, He loves you, He's with you. And yet there's times there is a great lack, in a Christian's life even, a great lack of comfort. We want comfort. We want to hear God's voice. We want to experience His presence. And we just don't. And so, folks, you've heard some great testimonies. You've heard some stories of experiencing His presence through trials. But today, we're going to turn the corner a little bit, shift gears. You're going to hear from a couple who we know and love, who James lost his father-in-law and Crystal lost her father. And he was, I think it was 59 years old, and that's, I don't know if you realize that's young to go, and yet it was devastating to them. And it's not so much like you think, oh, well, it's hard losing a child, but it's not so hard losing a parent. No, it's hard losing someone you love.
Yeah.
And we're going to deal with that today. We're going to talk about the ups and downs and what helps, what doesn't help, and we're going to hear the testimony. But first, I want to remind you, we are a live call-in show, and we would love you to still participate. We may not be taking calls today, but there's several ways you could participate, and I'm going to let Linda tell you how you can do that.
Hi, everybody. Hey, we are not going to open the phone lines today because this is going to be a testimony, okay? And we want to give them the time to say everything that they want to. But if you have a question or a comment, you could always text Calvary Chapel Eagle's phone. That is 208-891-2635. Or if you're watching Facebook Live, you can go ahead and leave some comments there. Okay. And, but today we're not taking phone calls unless at the end, for some reason, we have extra time, we'll open it up. But we never do with these testimonies. So I'm just giving you a heads up. Listen, because this is a story. All of the grief stories are different because grief is its own animal. And each person goes through grief differently. And you've heard some spectacular things, and you've heard some not so spectacular things. We just want to hit a different aspect. And as you said, I've told you, we have several other interviews lined up. So we're going to keep coming back to this topic, spreading it out through our shows, because we feel this is one of the ministries the Lord has given us to give people a chance to share their story, which is very healing for them. But it's also, there are people out there who need to hear what they have to say. Mike?
Okay. So what I've asked James and Crystal to do is just at least be prepared to tell a little bit of the story. And then we're going to ask, you know, we've got a lot of questions we want to ask them. And a little background to this. I've known James and Crystal for almost 15 years when I first moved out here to, you know, Idaho. I went on staff at Calvary Chapel Boise. James was very involved there, and I met him in various situations. As time went on, James actually came alongside me and was like a ministry assistant. He came alongside, and there were times I had projects. What? Linda's got
and
something.
He was your nurse in the hospital.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Was the CNA. Yeah.
Well, James... Well, there were times when I had projects that were way too much for me to handle. I'm thinking, I don't know how in the world I'm going to get all this done. And James would walk in and say, what do you want me to do? Well, I can help. And I'd say, okay. And I'd hand him work, and he would help me. He would help unbury me of the pile of ministry work that I had in front of me. And what Linda was referring to is I had a pulmonary embolism a few years back, and I was in the hospital, and good old James came in and says, oh, you're in this floor. And we got talking, and he says, you know, you're in the floor where people are ready to die any moment. He was a real encouragement.
Telemetry.
Yeah.
I'll never forget
telemetry.
That telemetry.
He says, we got you all hooked up to machines, so if something goes wrong, your heart stops beating, they know at the nurse's station right away.
Says, thank you, James.
Thanks.
That was so comforting.
Thanks, James.
I try.
Praise the Lord for the God of all comfort. You know?
Okay. Well, yeah. Let's get to their story. I want to hear this.
Okay. So I'm going to start with Crystal, because Crystal was the one, just to be honest with you, she's the one who felt this the deepest and the hardest, because this is her father. And as she'll tell the story, you see that this was... Some people are not as close to their parents as others. Crystal was very close to her father, and I'm just going to let her tell you the story, and then we'll go from there. So, Crystal, hope you don't mind. It's all yours.
Okay. I guess I just started to prepare with just kind of what had happened. Like you said, he died on January 6, 2018. He had the flu, and as the flu virus, I think, was kind of going away, he had developed a pneumonia that was then complicated by sepsis and toxic shock. And after writing this out, I kind of went back and started in September. My dad had a motorcycle accident that should have killed him that September. He was going over one of our mountain passes, and on one of the corners, the bike malfunctioned and went over a ravine. And he pushed the bike away from him. The bike went down the bottom of the ravine, and he started sliding down the ravine, managed to hook a stump with his arm, pull himself out. He called my aunt, who came and picked him up, and then called me, who met him halfway and took him to the hospital. And he had some fractured ribs and some other injuries. But unbeknownst to him and to us, and I don't know if the doctors really realized it either, but he had, till later, damaged his phrenic nerve, which allows your diaphragm to move. And so his diaphragm on his right side was paralyzed. And I think that's a big part of why he, being so healthy, developed pneumonia. But shortly after Christmas, my dad, probably the week after Christmas, fell ill with some flu-like symptoms. And we had just gotten over an illness. And so James was like, we are not going over there because we do not want to get sick again. It had been a really bad year of sickness in our house as it was. And so I called and talked to him on the phone. I went and got him some cold and flu medicine, got him, he loved to take elderberry juice. So got him that and Powerade, and encouraged him to drink lots of fluid, get rest, and eat when he could. Later that week, he told me that the cough was the worst part of it. He couldn't sleep. And on Tuesday, he had told me that he felt like he was going to die because the cough was just so intense. And I was like, Dad, you're not going to die. And he asked if I should take him to the ER. And I had done some shifts in the ER occasionally, and we were seeing lots of flu cases that year. And there's not a lot you can do. It's more of drink lots of fluid and get rest. And
yeah, now Crystal is a nurse herself, so just a little background on that. And so if you're going to get advice from somebody, you do want to ask a nurse, you know?
since his... cough was still not controllable no matter what he took. I got him an appointment with his doctor on Thursday, and I took him in to that visit. And the doctor agreed that he most likely had a virus, probably the flu, but since the treatment for both would be the same thing, they weren't going to test for it. And I had asked him how deadly was the flu this year, however they seen very many deaths, and he said that not in the healthy. They were mainly seen in people with other problems, heart problems, kidney problems, things like that. And so sent us home with a prescription for prescription strength cough medicine and encouraged more rest and fluids. That Friday was a really busy day for us. We had a lot of things we needed to do. We had an exchange student who was living with us, and we were going to celebrate her birthday with her friends and with a homemade Asian meal. And previously, we had made plans to borrow his truck. And so I went and checked on him, and he had that fever again, and he was covered in a rash. And that really bothered me. I couldn't put my finger on it, what was causing this rash. And so as we went and we did our errands, I began searching on my phone, you know, would it be a reaction to the medication he just started? Would it be an interaction with his prescription meds that he took? So when we returned the truck, I asked him if he wanted to go to the ER, and he said that he just wanted to rest. And I said, well, if you wanted to go, this would be the best time because we got a lot that was going on, and he still declined. And so we went home and started that meal, and the friends came over and such. And about 5 p.m., he texted me and said he'd probably better go. Mm. And I was like, I can't go right now. Mm. And I said, you know, maybe you could text or call Cliff, my brother who lived in town. And I had kind of thought about calling Cliff, but then I was kind of feeling like if he's got the flu, he's got a baby, and I don't know if I was like, Cliff can make that decision if my dad calls him. Well, he never did call Cliff. So dinner was down around 8:30, and I called my dad, and I could just tell he wasn't breathing well. He wasn't able to speak right. He wasn't mentating right. Something is wrong. So I told him, I'm coming over, and I'm taking you to the ER. And
now, how far, you both lived in Baker. How far is the ER? Is there a good hospital in that area? Because I know eventually, right. Did you end up in Boise?
We did end up in Boise, but yeah, we have a critical access hospital in Baker. Baker's only, what, about 3 miles?
3 miles square.
So it's everything's close.
Okay.
But I went to his house, and all he wanted to do was sleep. But I got him up, got him dressed, got him to the ER, and when they took his first set of vitals, I realized that he was septic and that rash was from toxic shock. And the doctors confirmed that later. That x-ray showed that he had pneumonia, and it also showed that diaphragm on the right side had not been working. So the ER followed their protocol that they're supposed to do for sepsis. And initially they were going to keep him in the ICU in Baker. And I think that gave me a false hope that everything was going to be okay, because they don't keep really sick people. They keep people who just might need a little bit of support, you know. But anything that's really sick, they usually ship off to Boise. And I had notified my family that dad wasn't doing well. I had called, my brother Cliff was there with me, and I feel like he had a better sense that dad might not make it. A few of the things he said in my mind's like, no, he's gonna get through this, he's gonna be fine. I was kind of in denial, but they did make the decision to transfer him to the ICU in Boise, and I went with him on the life flight plane, and I couldn't sit next to him, just the way the plane was set up. But I do remember him saying that he was so thirsty and asking for water. And when we got off the plane, I told him, it's like, well, we'll be at the hospital soon and we can get you some water. And we got to the hospital. They had me leave to get him settled and set up. And when I came back in, he was intubated. He had a tube down his throat to help him breathe. And they had him sedated. And they said that he had gone into a rapid atrial fibrillation, so his heart was doing a rhythm that wasn't good because of the stress on his heart, and that he had lost consciousness. And that was about 4 in the morning on the 6th. And then I needed to make some decisions about his care. His kidneys were starting to shut down, and so they wanted to put him on dialysis, so they had me leave again to put the dialysis catheter in, and then they had change a shift around 7. And so when they brought me back in, he was coding, where they're giving him CPR and trying to keep him alive. He was in what's called a pulseless electrical activity, where the electrical pathways of the heart are functioning, but the heart's not pumping any blood. And my brother and I watched him, them code him for I don't know how long, and till they finally called it and said that there was nothing more.
So on top of everything else, you know, this is your dad, but you're a nurse. You've been around a bit. You've been a nurse for a while. And I'm sure this must have been a real helpless feeling. I mean, you're a medical professional. You know what's going on when you see them working on him in the ICU. And it's like, this must have been really just a helpless, terrible feeling for you. There's nothing you couldn't jump in and say, I'm a nurse, get out of the way. You
know? I don't think I would have been even able to necessarily. But yeah, it's like, it was at times surreal because I had been the nurse in that room doing that.
That's, you know, what I'm thinking.
I had worked in ICU. I had been in these situations. I had dealt with septic patients. And now I'm on the other side of it.
Now, have you seen septic patients pull out of it? I mean, it wasn't like you're looking at it thinking there's no hope. You were looking at it hopeful and thinking, I've seen things, people bounce back from this sort of thing.
Sepsis is a killer, but it's, if you catch it early, which I had hoped that we had caught it early, it is survivable.
But it happened fast, it seems.
It was really fast. So they did kind of get him cleaned up and let us sit with him for a while. And some of his friends from Baker, who had heard that he was sick, were starting to get to Boise by that time. And so we had to tell him that he had died.
Now, I remember that day. I was pretty sick myself. When along there did you actually text me? You texted me something like, we need help now. And I just felt so helpless because I'm home with the flu myself. And I find out your father died from the flu and complications. And I'm just thinking, I want to help, but I can't move, you know.
James, not sure what time.
Well, I left Baker at like 7.
Yeah, we had a bunch of teenage girls at our house that he had to go find places for from the birthday party. And so he got them all settled and then came over. And I think I texted you shortly after came, because I think I was just holding on till James could get there. And then James came in and I just saw reality set in on James's face and realized that I wasn't going to be able to lean on him for strength right now because he was hurting so much.
Yeah.
And so I was just grasping for anyone. And I texted.
And I've apologized so many times, but I apologize again. I really wanted to be there for you guys, but I was hit with the flu, but it wasn't, of course, not as bad as your dad, but it was bad.
And, you know, we've more recently have discussed this, and looking back, I mean, we felt so alone and isolated.
Yeah.
And feel like, you know, perhaps that was God's plan for our life, to grow more dependent on God and, you know, even more dependent on each other. And so it was rough. It was hard, but
it sucked.
Well, because what our listeners don't know too is you had within the last couple of years gone out to Baker to plant a church. You lived with your father for a time before you could find your own house, and this was a whole new, actually, an exciting stage of your life that you're planting a church and with high hopes and anticipations in the same town that your dad lived. And this just put a damper on everything, huh?
Yeah, our whole family lived there. Her whole family lives there.
A lot of my family lives there.
You know, was really great to get out there and see them all. But in the end, now I understand now that we were there really to not only plant the church and help people, but to get to know Bob better.
Yeah, yeah.
That was great.
The Lord has all kinds of hidden background reasons why he allows what he allows, you know?
Yeah.
I see on your notes, I think you've got more to the story you want to tell.
That's kind of, you know, that part of the story. And I think we had talked to you before about, you know, and that initial time, how we couldn't find God. We couldn't feel his presence. We felt alone and lost. We were reaching out to those in our life who were spiritually strong for help. And we weren't really, you know, getting a lot of direction there.
Yeah, it seemed like everybody we called had something that they couldn't pull away from. And at that time, we were, you know, our little church body in Baker was praying for us because we had told them. And that's awesome that people pray for you, but sometimes you just need to see a face. You need to hug somebody.
Right.
You need someone to be there to help you through it. And, I mean, we didn't have any of that. We don't have those amazing, oh, God was there and everything was fine.
Yeah. You know? Well, that's one of the things I want to focus on in our time together today, because a lot of the listeners, like you, they've listened to some of the testimonies. And they thought, they think, well, how wonderful. God was there for you every step along the way. And he even prepared you in a dream or prepared you. I mean, because a lot of the testimonies we've had, even our own story, that the Lord had equipped and prepared us, that we knew, we almost knew it was coming, especially Linda, because of a dream that she had. And yet, I think our listeners need to hear a story. But what about those times when you just get flat hit in the gut and you didn't see it coming, and in the midst of your pain, you cry out to God and you feel a lack of any kind of help or support, or, you know, it's not like this miraculous, oh, the Lord just lifted me up and everything was okay. And I think, you know, there are believers right now listening to this program that need to understand. And this is a pastor and his wife. And they're telling of their story of loss and pain and the time when they really needed someone to come around. And even to my shame, I was not able to rise up and get out there. It's like there's times we all go through that. It's not just, by the way, it doesn't mean you're in sin. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that God doesn't love you and that you've done something wrong in your life. This is a pastor and his wife who've been faithfully serving the Lord, planting a church in Baker. Mm-hmm. And yet there was a real pain with no solution, with no help, with no voice of God intervening, you know. And I think that's one of the reasons we wanted the two of you on today, is because people need to hear the other side of the story. You know, they've heard a lot of other kind of testimonies. But what do you do when you cry out to God and you don't feel like he's answering? There's just an emptiness.
Keep
so
crying.
Where did you go from there? I mean,
I do want to say that, you know, our community did rally around us, and my coworkers were amazing. They allowed me to have a couple months off of work, and they provided a lot for our physical needs. They brought food to us for at least a month.
Wow. And he worked for the Forest Service, and those guys were just overwhelming. Provision from people.
Our physical needs were well provided for in the community. It was, you know, that spiritual aspect that, you know, we just felt hanging and almost in a
where's God? Where is God sense. Like, I mean, yeah, the church was doing good. People, the church had grown a little bit and things were going well, but then this happens, and you got to understand, Bob was 59 years old and he could out hike me. He could out hunt me. He could out pack me.
He had been hunting a week before he got sick.
A week before, he was hunting in snow. You know, I mean, this man was like, okay, this is what I need to be like when I'm a grandpa. honestly, it came out of nowhere. And I can remember sitting there and kind of like, hey, you know what? He's sick. He'll get over it. He probably
because he's Superman, right?
He got a cold because he's out hunting in the snow. You know? Then this happens, and it totally, I wouldn't have thought of as we look back on it now, I wouldn't have said, oh, this is what God's going to do so that we're going to draw closer to him.
No. Yeah, it's no, like if that's what it is, you could say, well, that's okay. I'll stay right where I'm at.
Know, right? Yeah. You know, if I stay here, are you going to keep doing this to me? It just felt like we were being, I mean, with how we are raised in the church and how we believe in the Lord, that he's always there for us. And, oh, the Lord will give you nothing you can't handle. I'm like, huh. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I think he's got a wrong scripture here.
That's one of the things. Yeah, that's one of the things we talked about in sharing our testimony, that is not the promise of scripture. It says that he'll never let you go through a temptation.
Right.
That's too great for you to handle, that you can't say no to sin. You can always say no to sin. He'll give you the strength. But handling something more than you can handle, the Apostle Paul went through it all the time. Yeah. He says, you know, I despaired of life itself. And so I think that's one of the points, and there's many here, but that's one of the things I want our listeners to understand, that just because you feel like you're going through something that's more than you can handle, doesn't mean that God isn't real. It doesn't mean that, God isn't there. As a matter of fact, you can not sense someone's presence and they're with you even though you don't know they're with you, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's times I want to use that from the podium, close my eyes and say, are you still there? Because I don't see you, you know? I mean, there's times we have an audience with God all the time. He's watching, he's listening. Why he doesn't talk more, I don't know. Why he doesn't touch us and cradle us in his arms and rock me back and forth. You know,
that's what we want.
Many times that's what I want.
Definitely
know?
A year ago, that's what we wanted was the Lord to just truly just reveal himself so we could have that amazing God save 10,000 through this man's life.
Yeah.
You know, but we have this, hey, we got to do church. What do you want to do?
And right, you got to go back to being a pastor.
And how long did you take off?
I think you took a couple of weeks off. I took a couple months.
Yeah.
I think, or at least a month. I know I took a couple months off of work. And, you know, going back to that, you know, I didn't feel for 2 months, and there's 2 months that are fuzzy in my memory and just feel dark. And even though I was reading the scriptures, they weren't speaking to me. It was words on a page. And I think it was probably around in that third month that finally some of the scriptures, and it was the Psalms. It was the Psalms 10:1. Why, Lord, do you stand off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? And it was these Psalms that David was crying out to the Lord, and even in some other places that I realized that there's a lot of grief in the Bible and a lot of people going through pain and hurt and didn't feel God, but he was still there.
Well, you know what? That is important right there, because I just went to look that verse up. And I think that's why so many people relate to the Psalms, because David went through everything that we go through. He felt the same kinds of pain and abandonment and emptiness, even God not answering him. I mean, look at it. It says, why do you stand afar off, O Lord? Why do you hide in times of trouble? This is King David that we all love to read his Psalms, you know. We all love to study his life. He's a man after God's own heart, you know. But King David, who we all look up to, and of course, he's a model of faith, right? Mm-hmm. But he was the one who said that, God, you sometimes hide yourself in times of trouble. And folks, I want you to understand this. If you're going through something right now and God seems so far away, this broadcast is God's timing, God's ordained plan to know you're not alone. Just because you don't feel God doesn't mean that he's not there. We'll talk a little bit more about what went on after that. But and you know what? It's not a quick story with a happy ending either. Because, you know, just recently we've gotten together with James and Crystal because they're still feeling pain. It's not like, you know, it's been, they hit the 1 year anniversary. It was just January 6th of last year.
That's a Sunday.
And so Sunday was the 1 year anniversary. And it's not like, okay, it's been a year now, we're over it. No, that's not the way life is, folks. Mm. And remember, you know, I think one of the reasons I love the scriptures, of course, it's the Word of God, but we also see real people going through real situations, real trials, and it's the same kinds of things that I relate to, that I go through in my life. That's why, folks, if you're going through something like Crystal did, read the Psalms. Because you're going to hear from, they're not all written by David, but many of them are, but you will hear from men of God who have written of times when they feel abandoned by God or they feel a big emptiness, and the Psalms will meet you where you're at, and they'll take you to the place that you need to be, and you'll be able to connect with real men and women of God who've gone through who've gone before you, okay? Now I hear the music. That means we're going to take a station break. We'll be back in about 60 seconds.
You're listening to 94.1 The Voice, KBXL, Caldwell, Boise, radio you can believe in. Stay tuned, Mike and Linda will be right back. Look Up was recently extended to a full hour from 2:30 to 3:30 every Monday through Friday. Mike and Linda want to help you apply God's Word to your everyday life. Through Facebook Live, text, and phone, you can ask questions about what the Bible has to say about the real things that are going on in your life. If you would like to text the Sassos, the number is 208-891-8255. 2635. The best way to have your question answered is to call the Sassos in the studio right now. That number is 208-377-3790. To learn more about Calvary Chapel Eagle, visit calvarychapeleagle.com. Now here's Mike and Linda.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for hanging in there with us for that minute. You know, we have to do that at the top of the hour. Now, what we were talking about is when something happens, and instead of this wonderful, miraculous story, how God just used it and so many people were saved, there's just this emptiness of, excuse me, God, are you there? Do you know what I'm going through? Mm-hmm. In my time of need, when I am hurting so bad, I am not finding you. And that is the reason that we wanted to bring James and Crystal on, because I feel more of you out there listening are going to have that story than some of these nice, miraculous ones that we, you know, have shared, even like with ours, where when we look back, we see that the Lord prepared us with the dreams and, you know, doing our own pre-planning. I mean, just how all of these pieces fit together. But I would bet you anything, more of you, when you go through something, you stop and you wonder, where is God? Is there God? Those are okay questions to ask at times when you're not feeling his presence right there, when you're not feeling the miraculous. So we wanted to do this program for them. They need to tell this story, but you need to hear this story too. And no, you're not a weirdo because you go through something traumatic and you just feel like, where is anybody? So who's going to pick up now? Who wants to pick up with this story?
I guess I will.
Okay.
You know, how it affected me, you know, gosh, we'd been married, what, 12 years? I think 12 or 13 years. And Bob had become a really good friend. And he would spend time with us. Like Mike was saying, we used to work with you guys and we didn't commute from Baker to Boise. But we lived here. And so Bob would drive over and he would spend weeks with us. And so he became a really good friend. And I remember one time even asking him about his daughter and how do you deal with women? He was that kind of a friend, you know? Of course, we were walking around in Cabela's. That didn't hurt any. But, you know, one of the great things I see from this is that the Lord moved us over to Baker City. And it wasn't like we had this spontaneous church growth where all this stuff happened, but some people got saved. My kids, our kids, they got to know their grandpa.
Isn't that wonderful?
It's, you know,
that is wonderful.
I see my brother-in-law. I got two brother-in-laws. I see both of them with their little babies and they're not going to know. They're going to hear stories of how great he was, but they're not going to know him. Mm. They're not going to know his laugh and the weird things that grandpas do. But my kids will, and it means a lot to me. It means so much to me that my kids were able to see that. And I wouldn't have planned it that way, but living with the guy, hanging out with him, having him over for dinner. Just the other night, our 9-year-old, she was, I miss Grandpa. And I said, what do you miss? He used to come over for dinner.
Aww.
You know, and then you have to explain, where's Grandpa, to your 9-year-old?
Yeah.
Mm. You know, and we don't get that a lot, but.
Right.
Again, back here, we don't have that. I don't know. I just can't say it enough. We don't have that amazing thing. We have this lost in loneliness time out in the middle of nowhere where we didn't really know where to look for help except for, let's try to read the Bible. Let's try and go. Let's try and do church. Let's just keep trying. Let's just do one more thing.
Keep doing what God had told you to do because you're not getting anything new. Right.
Right. And that's what we did. We were just like, okay, well, I had a brother tell me, well, you don't have to do the church anymore. And I was like, okay, but I asked Crystal, do you feel like we should stop doing the church? And both of us were like, no, we don't feel like, we feel like we should keep going. Not that we could. It wasn't a desire. You know, it's much easier to just close the church and go sit in the back of a church somewhere and allow your kids to go to church somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But the Lord's like, keep doing what I called you to do.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's when it comes to the point you really got to know what God's called you to do. Because in a time of pain like that, it's just real easy to go, I'm done. I'm done. And you got to really, that's why hearing from the Lord is so vital. Please, Lord, give me direction. I want to hear from you. Do you want me to keep going? Instead, I just got to make this decision on my own.
And that's what it feels like, because you don't feel this overwhelming sensation. There's no light. There's no parting of the clouds. It's just God didn't tell you to leave. God didn't tell you to stop.
Right. Well, we were talking about that in the restaurant. We had lunch together today. And one of my philosophies, at least, and I think we all agreed, is that when the Lord gives you direction and you know he's giving you direction, to stay on course until you know he's telling you to turn to the right or left or stop. Mm-hmm. And if he sent you to plant that church and you knew he was sending you to plant the church, then the only thing you could do is, even when you're feeling empty and got nothing to offer, is hold course until you hear from the Lord clearly again. Because right now I'm not hearing from the Lord. And
right.
I think a lot of our listeners, a lot of Christians don't realize, people in ministry go through that. That we want to serve the Lord, and there's times you go through a season where you're just not hearing from God. Yeah. And it's not necessarily, you know, by the way, if you're living in sin, that's an obvious reason. Repent, okay? but if you're not living in sin, but maybe a trauma or a tragedy has hit you, that certainly is a time when it takes the wind out of your sails.
Well, and a tragedy doesn't change what God has called you to do.
Right.
It may make it harder to do it at the time, but it doesn't change it if you're not given a direction. And I think that's where so many people mess up. A tragedy happens, and they give up serving the Lord, because something bad happened. Well, what good did this do me, serving the Lord in this? Look what happened. But we don't quit. We don't give up. And see, James, you think you don't have a miraculous story. Just in the fact that you guys kept going is quite a miraculous story. Now, you guys tell us, how has this last year been? There had to be a few turning points.
What has helped?
Can we talk
a little bit about that?
Yeah.
What has helped?
You know, something I do want to share, and I know you've kind of talked about it too, but is I struggled with a lot of guilt. There was a lot of what ifs. What if I'd gotten there earlier? I should have noticed this. Right. I should have noticed that. And I've had to fight off a lot of that. And probably the biggest help to me has been, over the years, I've had many conversations with my dad, and he very much believed that he had a time to die, and when that time came, nothing would stop his death. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't in reference to something like this, it's usually in reference to something else, but he's like, well, if I don't die there, I'll probably be in a car accident somewhere else. He's like, that time is my time. And so I could hold on to that. Mm-hmm. But later on, I started to see... when I was a young mom, Carol Krivnikar had a Bible study. And one of the things in that study she really focused on, going to forget the reference now, but Philippians, whatsoever things are true.
Right.
And it gives a whole list. And at the end, meditate on these things. And you can almost always stop at whatsoever things are true. And the what ifs and the I should haves and all of that is not truth. It's not reality. There's no do-overs. Mm-hmm. To think that that is a fantasy, and I have to not focus and meditate on those things. And I did the best I could under the circumstances, and I have to trust in God's timing, that he's good and that he's merciful, because his word says he is,
even
though I can't see it.
Well, one of the things you mentioned over lunch is you mentioned how Grief Share Ministry helped you. And that's come up a few times as we've interviewed different people who've gone through the loss of a loved one. And for our listeners, especially those who maybe they're going through a loss of a loved one, or they're trying to help somebody who's lost a loved one, or you know what, all of us someday will face that. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about Grief Share. How did you discover it, and how did it help? What is Grief Share?
Sure. We had a couple in our church who had lost two sons. And
the one couple lost both sons?
Yes.
And she had been... it was called Stonecroft Ministries, been going around sharing her testimony. And she ran into a couple who had also had a loss in their life and had this grief share material. And so she gave it to them, and they brought it back to Baker. And they talked about how helpful that was. for them, and as well as they tried to help other people in the community with that ministry. Mm-hmm. And so when shortly after my dad died, they gave us the CDs to watch, and we ended up buying the materials as well. But it's designed to be in a support group type situation. Each week you watch a DVD, and it has people, Christians who have.
Well, you know, I was going to say, it's not only for the grieving, but for someone like me, it's how to help someone who's grieving.
Oh, good, good.
Because I had not lost anything in my life, that I loved. And when I even though I was in the ministry, I'm a young guy, and I didn't know how to help my wife. But going through the Bible study, and I'm anti-Bible study. I'm like, you got the Bible, just read the Bible. The Bible, you know, but she's a different mindset. So I was like, well, I'll do this with you. And it really helped me understand what she was going through. So through this whole grief share process, I was able to like, oh, hey, I understand what's going on right now.
Uh-huh. Grief Share is a solid Christian program, right? It's not just a secular self-help program. No, Grief Share is strong Christian.
It's all based on scripture. And it was the Grief Share. They have daily work for you to do throughout the week. Mm-hmm. And it's real simple. They take a verse and then ask you a few questions. So you're meditating on those scriptures. And that was, I feel like, when I finally started feeling God speak to me again.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's that. And then we spent the summer just trying to rejuvenate our life. You know, where Bob was a mountain guy. We love the mountains. So we were camping and stuff like that. But then we went up to the pastor's meeting. And that was awesome, where we surprisingly ran into you guys.
Yeah.
In the same hotel.
That was crazy.
That was fun.
But, you know, it's the Lord's design plan right there, you know, because that was, it's hard to do ministry when your wife is at home and sad. And you got to go in there and have faith in the Lord, people. And your wife's at home going like, where's my father?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. There's more to it than that, but with the grief share and the Bible study and going through all that stuff, I really think that, man, we got up there, we were able to worship with some people and just really raise our hands and be ministered to. See, that was what was missing.
Right.
So he dies in January, and that meeting was in September, I think. And so it was 9 months of desiring to be ministered to and hear from God and just waiting.
Right.
And sure, we had to travel 500 miles to get it. But
that was a good conference.
It was a great conference.
Yeah, and you know what? For people in ministry, if you're in ministry out there listening to this, I want to recommend you need to take ministry breaks. You need to get away for retreats, conferences. There was time in my life where I felt like I don't need any stinking conference. I mean, to be honest with you, when I lived in California, there was a conference every 3 to 6 months, and I got so tired of them. I went for a long time out here without any conference. I don't need a stinking conference. But, you know, you do ministry long enough and you get enough bumps, you hit bumps in the road, and you have tragedies, things happen. Every now and then we in ministry need to put down our work and just go and sit and listen to someone minister to us the word of God, raise our hands and worship. We need to receive. Just sit at the feet of Jesus. So if you're in ministry and you're listening to this, God could be speaking that very thing to you. This could be the whole reason you've tuned in today. Okay. Now, to those who are not in ministry, we all need to be sitting at the feet of Jesus. And so you got to find a time. And if you're hurting, I think the worst thing you could do is to shut God out. Yes. And just go, you know, I don't want to hear from anybody. I don't want to read my Bible. I know there's times you read your Bible and it's not even speaking to you. It's not doing anything. It's like Crystal was saying, words on a page. That's all it is. But there's times that you need to be in church. You need to be around people who love you. And unfortunately, I don't know if you experience this much, but sometimes you're around people who love you, and they're trying to help, and they say all the wrong things. It's like, thank you very much, go away. Have you had some of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that happens a lot.
Yeah.
And I think what was kind of nice about the Grief Share, too, is that it kind of went into that. People are going to say things that are not helpful.
Oh, they prepare you for that.
Yes.
Oh,
that's
good. There's a whole section of people prepared.
To be realize that they're not trying to offend you, right. And to try to be gracious.
Right. But they don't know what to say. People don't know what to say. And you know, one of the great things that we've learned through all of this is, well, I love you guys, but we got to really rely on the Lord. Yeah. You know, I think of you guys and I pray for you guys. You know, the Sasso's here, but it's one of those things where we felt alone. And I think a lot of people out there get this idea of, well, who can I talk to? What can I do? And honestly, it was the driving for me, right, is one of the best times, because I could just drive and pray, right? And just drive and like listen to nothing. If you ever just listen to nothing. And that's what I did on the morning over, as I drove over and I was driving, I kept getting updates via text message. And so, you know, my boy would read them to me. Mm. But other than that, it was just quiet. And one of the verses I wanted to share was the Lamentations 3:56 is, "You have heard my voice, do not hide your ear from my sighing. For my cry for help." And, you know, as I'm driving, all I can think of is, Lord, let me get to Crystal. Let me help Crystal. Yeah. Help me be there for Crystal. You know, and as I look back, I should have been saying, hey, Lord, will you heal Bob? But I was like, I need that, to be there for my wife.
There's a tendency that we all go through when we lose somebody. It's like the what ifs and the what I should have done. And there's one of the things that the Lord showed me years ago is no guilt. Yeah. No blame.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to take it on. And I was thinking about that, Crystal, when you were telling the story, because you're a nurse and you saw some signs, but you go, he's going to be okay. You want to believe the best. You know, it's like, boy, we could just jump on that and go, you should have known. You know, you could just take on the guilt. And that's, boy, that's the work of Satan.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He's the accuser of the brethren. He wants to make us feel guilty and responsible. But like you said, then, James, there's times that God has his time, and you just got to trust that, was this his time? Was this the way the Lord wanted to take him home? There's things we don't know. We don't understand.
Yeah. You know,
it's above our pay grade.
He even joked with the motorcycle crash. It's like, I guess it's not my time. Thanks, Bob. If we could have known that a couple months earlier, maybe we would have done some more. But one of the things that we've really done is we've really enjoyed being with our family.
Good.
Like let's purposefully go and see family.
Yes.
We don't all get along. That's okay.
Right.
But
and that's one of the lessons for our listeners too, is because you want to live without regrets, then don't put off loving your neighbor, loving your family, loving the people in your life. There's some of them are unlovable. And some are more pleasant than others. Some are unpleasant.
Yes.
And you know what? Live without regrets. You know, love while you can and spend time with family while you can. Yeah.
We have about 8 minutes left. Is there something you wanted to get in there that, you know, you need to say that we haven't got to yet?
I do.
Okay, good.
How much time?
You know, I struggled and struggled, and then I felt at that pastor's conference that there was this little bit of revelation, and God was telling me he's going to give me a new heart and renew my spirit, and I was so encouraged. And, you know, I kept that encouragement for a few months, and then as November came along and into the holidays, I just slowly sank back under into this grief and struggle. And it was actually preparing for this program that I looked back over my notes and saw what I had written at that conference, and I was like, oh, that's right. And then I felt bad for slipping. And then it's like, no, this is the whole grief process.
That's right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be ups and downs. You're going to do better, and then you're going to be back under for a little while, and God's gonna, you know, get you through that. And something I had learned is that they say that the heart takes about 3 to 6 months to catch up to what the brain knows. So your heart can't take all that pain at once. And so I don't know if there's like some sort of a block, but it's slowly, the brain knows he's gone. But the heart has a hard time dealing with that. And I think as we heal, there's a little bit more that's released. And that's why we kind of go back into the sadness again. Mm-hmm. And it's not a backsliding, it's a progression of the grief. And so, you know, I've been seeing that pattern in my own life, and anyone who's grieving, I want them to know that that's not backsliding or regressing or anything. It's just, you have to, grief's not fun, and you have to work through it. You have to do, as they call it, the
it's
grief.
It's a process. Mm-hmm. It's not an instant that comes and goes in your life. You
and
know?
Everyone's different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everyone's different. People, you have to know that everyone will go through this differently.
Yeah. Okay. Even us being married and as close as we are, I mean, we are polar opposites in our grief.
And our relationship is different with your dad, too.
Right. Yeah.
Or with the person.
Well, I do want, and you feel free to interrupt me, but I do want to share a few thoughts from the scriptures, because you got me going when you brought up that Psalm 10:1 verse. And I was looking up while you guys are talking and look up a few verses that I really felt was important for us to consider. You know, let's look at a couple things, and you guys feel free to, you know, I'll just turn it back over to you any second. But in Job chapter 13, verse 24, Job prayed, "Why do you hide your face and regard me as your enemy?" Now, those of you who know the story of Job, you know that he was the one that God was bragging about. God bragged to Satan, says, "Have you seen my servant Job? There's no one like him on the face of the earth." And yet Job went through such depth of depression and emptiness and, of course, physical ailment, covered with sores, all kinds of story here. I'm not going to go into all, but I want you to know that all throughout the scripture, there are men and women of God who love the Lord, who are in right standing with God, and yet find themselves in this place of, why do you hide your face from me? Why do you regard me as your enemy? And of course, that verse that Crystal said a moment ago, why do you stand afar off? This is David. Why do you stand afar off, O Lord? Why do you hide in times of trouble? I mean, that's certainly the time you want him the most. Folks, understand that's not the time to give up on God. Yes. That's not the time to go, well, God's abandoned me, I'm leaving him. No, no. You know what? All throughout the scriptures. Again, you know, David in Psalm 13:1. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard that before? Have you ever felt like that? I'm waiting to hear from the Lord. I'm waiting. Hello. As a matter of fact, one more, then I got some more positive verses. That verse that Jesus quoted on the cross, Psalm 22:1, he goes, my God, why have you forsaken me? This is taken from one of David's Psalms. He says, he went on to say, why are you so far from helping me? And the words of my groaning, don't you hear my pain? Folks, you've got to understand this too is a part of life.
I understand those a lot better now.
Yes.
I those scriptures.
It's a part of real life. And you know, I mean, David prayed it now. Here's the thing. I'm going to skip ahead to a couple of verses. I want you to take this home with you. Psalm 27:14. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Here's the thing. If you're in a situation where you're not hearing from the Lord, I tell you, folks, honestly, from my heart, there's times that's all you could do is wait on him. And it doesn't mean you're going to wait with angels singing. It doesn't mean that you're going to be hearing the voice of God. There's times you're waiting to hear the voice of God and you're not hearing the voice of God. But you've got to determine, I am not going to give up. I'm going to wait on him. Mm-hmm. And that is a lesson of Christian maturity. That's a lesson we all have to learn, that even when everything in the natural says, you're done, stick a fork in it, you know?
Yeah.
And the Lord is saying, you need to wait. Matter of fact, a couple more, but
you know,
you got something? 2 minutes left.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, and that, you know, like, as you're reading those, the only thing I could relate to that is I really feel like the Lord was saying, will you trust in me?
Mm-hmm.
You talk a good talk, but are you willing? Are you willing? Are you really going to trust in me?
Right.
And it, you know, you say, yeah, I'm going to trust in you, Lord, and then everything's fine. But then when something like this happens, God really wants to see, what are you made of? What,
right.
How much Bible knowledge has sunk into your heart, and how much faith do you really have? And I think looking back at it, I had a pastor tell me, you guys are going to go to Baker and you're going to start a church, and God's doing it so that you're going to draw closer to him. Mm. Well, for a while, I didn't feel like we were. And then this happens,
and we lose sight of the Lord. And now that we're things are coming back together, I feel like Crystal and I, as a couple, we're stronger. As ministry, well, the church is the church, and it's God's church, and well, He's going to do with what He wants. But I think you and I are doing a lot better.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, see, one of the things about Job that I learned some great lessons from is that he said in Job 13:15, he says, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. And I think that is the sign of real spiritual maturity, when the Lord can get us to the point that everything's going wrong around us. I don't feel the presence of the Lord. Things don't look good. It looks like I'm going to die. It looks like God's going to slay me. But though he slay me, yet will I trust him. And I think that's it. I think that is the sign, is when we are on the right path, is when I am determined, no matter what happens in my life, though he slay me, I'm going to keep trusting him.
Yeah.
And I think we got probably about a minute left. Let me read this other verse and see if there's a, I'm skipping a whole bunch. I've got a whole bunch of things I want to, okay. So Isaiah 40:31, and you've all heard, this is a memory verse for some of you. Those that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They will mount up on wings as eagles. They will walk and not be weary. They'll run and not faint. And that
sing
verse.
Sing it for me, honey.
Yeah, I'm not going to sing the song. It is a song, and it's been put in various melodies, but it's a deep, deep truth as well. That if whatever you're going through right now, my friends, you need to wait on him. Yeah. Wait on him to the point that though he slay me, yet will I trust him.
Right.
And the Lord will redeem this time that you're going through. He will bring your righteousness out as noonday. Our time is up. You hear the music. But we're trusting that the Lord has spoken to somebody who's down today and needed to
God
hear
bless
this.
Him.
Lord bless you. And
thank
we'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you guys for coming
in
and sharing.
Yeah, thank you,
James. Thanks for
having
us.
And Crystal, thank you.
If you'd like to know more about Calvary Chapel of Eagle, just go to the website at cceagle.org. Be sure and join Pastor Mike every Saturday at 8 p.m. and on Sundays at 8 a.m. for his radio show, It's All About Jesus. If we ran out of time and you didn't get a chance to call in, you can send your questions to lookup@cceagle.org. And may the Lord richly bless you as you continue to look up to Jesus.
Look full in His wonderful face. I want to grow dim standing next to